Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. This feels like it's been our first show in forever.
Well, yeah, because we recorded the two parts of the... What did we do?
We did first special, albums. Our spring special, albums, yes.
Right.
And I'm assuming most of you out there realize that when we record any of our specials and we have our summer movie preview...
Don't tell them.
Forget that. Well, our summer movie preview is coming up soon. We do them back to back. And so my partner and I have like a 5-hour orgy of podcasting.
Let's not call it an orgy, please.
So we have this orgy, right? And I want to say this now, and I'm going to have a go at professional broadcasters. They stop. If you listen to commercial radio, there are commercials. During that time, or there are records playing, songs playing. During that time, the presenters, who you think are on air for like 6 hours, they're getting a cup of coffee, they're going to the toilet, they're doing all kinds of things.
Right.
You know, when the guy comes on to read the news and the weather, the main host is, you know, going to get a candy bar from the machine. On this show, we work nonstop.
Well, we do. When we have the two-parters, we do take a little break between, cup of coffee.
But my point is, when we do these two-parters, it therefore then means it feels like we go for like 7 weeks without podcasting.
That's true.
So I'm sitting here back in the basement studio, and I feel I'm slightly in an alien environment. It feels entirely... I have to get back into it for a minute.
Yeah, it's also because you're wearing a vest.
Yes, and I look good. Not a vest, not an undershirt vest, a suit vest.
Yes.
Three-piece suit.
It's all buttoned up and everything. I mean, isn't that uncomfortable?
That's the whole point. It's supposed to be buttoned up.
Yeah, but I understand it's supposed to be buttoned up, but isn't it uncomfortable in this context? Here I am. I'm in my Chelsea jersey.
Of course,
and you've got your button-down shirt and your vest on and, you know.
Well, we are going to get...
We should point out that you're going to the prom. It's just the reason
I am. I'm going to a prom, yes.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. I will let you, the listener, deduce from that whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's all I'm going to say. So anyway, we have a show today. But I guess before we get into the show, we actually have some listener feedback from our two-part spring special, which this year, if you haven't listened, and many of you have listened, if you haven't listened, we did first albums.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody can identify with their musical history and... You know, they all have their own version of it. Improvised Explosive Dave just told me last night that his first album was Poison. And he didn't mention the name of the album. It's the one with, I think it was one with Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Is that Poison? I don't know.
I vaguely remember the video, but yeah. I don't remember.
How the song goes? You don't remember how Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
That actually sounds for a brief moment like something I would listen to.
Every night has its dawn.
But you're making it sound like it's...
Every cowboy seems the same sad song.
You've just done that without the lyrics in front of you. And I can't decide if that's disturbing or not. You know, for those of you who don't know, my partner has just made that Poison song. What's it called? Every Rose Has a Thorn?
Has its thorn.
Has its thorn. You've made it sound like it's some sort of Frank Sinatra-esque ballad. Uh-huh. But in fact...
Well, it kind of is, just minus the...
But aren't Poison like a fluffy hair...
Yeah, but this is a hair ballad.
Sooty heavy metal band? Yeah, what were they?
But this song, this is, you know, this was part of the genre of hair ballads. Like, you know, these song, every album... But there was a stretch where all the hair bands... And pseudo metal bands. I mean, they were
they
metal
called
bands.
Hair bands?
Yeah,
is that what you call them? I didn't know that. Yeah. I've just learned something today.
Yeah, I don't think that's a. It's not a compliment. I don't think. No, I think it was. You know, originally they thought they were hard rock bands, but then they'd all come out with their little ballads. You know, to get the girls.
All right, so that was.
They could be the song for the prom.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
What do you know? Your prom song? Like, is there an official song?
I don't know.
Do they do that anymore? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm an adult.
I know. I remember when we were in high school, they had a vote for it. And a bunch of us were voting for a Dio song, I think it was.
High school is very different now.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
So that was ID's, was Poison.
Yep.
A couple of people that... I have a fan of the show, Gina. She texted me and said that after she'd listened to part one, it was the first time in her life that she'd had a show where we were able to reference Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the film about the flying car, with Fat Boy Slim, Big Beat Electro DJ.
She's saying the first time like she ever heard those things in the same piece of media.
Yes, and to be entirely honest, I'm trying to think of all the stuff I listen to, and I can't think of many other people that would have thrown those two things into the same thing, which makes us at a unique place. I also heard from Guy, who I actually told a story about in part one. He was the guy that when the guy, Guy was the chap that when we were all in high school together, we were all in high school together.
And chap was the guy.
Yes. not to be confused with Guy Fawkes, who is someone that you burn up.
He's neither a chap nor a guy.
No, he's a corpse. The guy was the young man, the young teenager who formed a garage band, and he was, you know, he played in front of all of us, and I made fun of him. That's right. He told me that when he turned on Album Firsts, it was the first ever episode of The Atlantic Voice that he'd ever listened to. And lo and behold, 10 minutes in, we're talking about him. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, that seems awfully convenient. Either that or there's a weird magical realism
Guy,
going on
and
here.
And that's great because Guy is now a fan. And I want to thank Guy for his story and now being a fan. I also want to reiterate, if you remember in part one, that I kind of tried to bully and taunt Guy all those years ago.
And you refused to apologize I suggested that this was an apology. And you're like, no, not apologizing.
The fact that Guy is now a fan of the show doesn't mean you're getting an apology. I'm sticking to the foundations of my beliefs.
Guy, you have my apologies. I know very well what it's like to deal with Zeph. Yes. And I can only imagine what it was like when he was 16.
if only there were podcasts then. Mm-hmm. I guess this is the moment to segue into what we're going to start off with. Those of you who have listened to the Album First two-part special, we threw the idea at you all that we were going to put one of our YouTube playlists up so that people could actually listen to the songs in their entirety that we talked about. And we've done that in the past. We did it for
You didn't put the whole albums on YouTube, did you?
I just did videos of the songs.
So in other words, they can't listen to the album in the entirety.
But they can listen to the song. There's about 2 hours worth of listening there of the every band, every album specifically, and every song that we played a snippet of on the show. I put the entire thing up.
Yeah.
Now we've done YouTube playlists in the past. Our car chase show. We actually put the clips up. Our Christmas show this year. We had all the pictures of the Christmas gifts we talked about. As listeners, you've always interacted with us, and you have clicked on these YouTube lists to watch and listen. So far, and again, many, many, many people have listened to part one and part two of our album First Spring Special, our first albums. We have zero views of our YouTube page. And so I want to say to all you fans out there, what's the matter with you?
You know what I want to say? I told you. Nobody wants to listen to the tunes. Like, first of all,
finish your thought, because we're going to start our YouTube.
I had suggested a Spotify playlist.
Sure.
And
I said no, because I don't have Spotify.
You can do that. Still set up a free account or something like that.
But then you're giving them your email address, and then the government have now changed in legislation. They're going to be selling your information. I'm not having that.
As it stands, we have a whole YouTube dilemma when it comes to profiles, because there's a Atlantic Voice. And YouTube's owned by Google, if people don't know that. So there's a...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's an Atlantic Voice, yeah. That's why I push it. That probably explains the other thing you were talking about earlier.
We'll get to that, yes.
So when you sign in as the Atlantic Voice. So we have an account that we both can access. I, of course, have my own account. You have your own account. Somehow, through all this, I now have... I get... information about
stuff that I've
people
watched.
That you're well not only that but contacts of yours show up, like whenever they're asking me like who do I want to follow on Twitter, which isn't even a Google property. I don't even know how this works. There's some place where the contacts of yours have made their way through the steps, either that or their contacts you keep under the Atlantic Voice thing, because I'm constantly getting things about following people on Twitter, or like when I go to type in an email address in Gmail or something, it pulls up addresses of people that you know from your job.
Okay.
It's very confusing.
All right.
I forget what we were. Oh, so YouTube. This is the other thing that's unique is you listen to the podcast at your desk, right?
Yes.
And you watch things and listen to music at your desk.
Yes.
Most people don't do that. Most people don't have the luxury of listening to a podcast for an hour and change at their desk. Not saying that that's all you're doing, but most people do that on their phones. So now you put a playlist on YouTube. Really, the only way people are going to listen to songs on YouTube is if they're at a computer. Because they're not going to, like when you're driving your car, you're not going to pull up YouTube have that streaming from the internet.
Okay, because I'm going to say this now about my relationship with the personal computer. And I'm now going to now make a claim that I, one of the most technologically primitive people in the world, is actually now on the cutting edge, because I use my computer as everything. It goes with me. When I'm walking in the house and I'm listening to the radio, I'll listen to the radio via the computer. And when I go to when I go into my garage to work on my car and I want to keep listening to the radio, I will take my laptop with me, put it down,
right,
and keep playing it as a device. If I want to watch something on TV that I can't, for whatever reason, get to my regular TV mm-hmm. in my house, mm-hmm. I'll just watch it on my computer with my headphones on. So what I'm saying is I am actually using the personal portable computer to the max of its medium.
So it officially makes you like you're from 2004.
Why?
Because people do that stuff on their phones and tablets now. People
yeah,
don't,
but you can't watch TV on your phone. You've computers. Just said that.
Now, sure you can. You can watch TV on your phone.
Yeah, but it's tiny. Why didn't my eyes
that's not the point. The point is that's what more people do now. That's why Verizon's going back to unlimited data and things, because people want to be able to watch everything.
I'm
going to
say this now. For those of you, the fans who know...
And the other phone companies going to unlimited.
Those of you who listen to our Resolution show will now... This will sound familiar to me.
Like a lot of people don't even buy computers anymore.
They don't?
No.
Why?
Because what do you need it for? You can do everything that you need to in terms of emailing, communicating with people, getting on the internet with a phone or a tablet.
Watching TV on
your iPad?
I don't know. I think that's good. You're starting to get what's too little. I still want a large... I'm one of those people that if I'm watching something on YouTube and I'm actually able to, like mm-hmm. I'm going to sit and watch it, I will hit the little icon to make the picture completely fill my 13-inch laptop screen.
All right.
I'm not going to watch it on that little 3x4 because it's tiny.
This makes you an anomaly. And then other people, when they want to see something bigger, they just connect it to their TV, you know, from their phone, and they use that as their source of things.
That's no good if
anyway,
you're in the garage.
Just pointing out that none
no
of this makes
you no good if you're
you
in the garage.
All a very long way of saying, I think this might be why nobody listened to the playlist on YouTube.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I will say the other member of this household listens to a good amount of music on YouTube when she's at work.
So, yeah, because it's a good way of finding stuff if you don't have a Spotify account.
But she's not really
account.
Renowned for being high tech.
So I'd be curious.
Renowned or renowned? Renowned.
Right. You say renowned, I say renowned. Mm-hmm. Let's call the whole thing off. Mm-hmm. So anyway, no one has listened to our YouTube playlist. So again, I'm going to put the boot into our fans. I mean, well, to be fair, some of you have engaged, which we've always asked you to. But now I'm going to criticize you all for not watching the YouTube playlist.
Yeah.
And even though it's just depressing to go and look on and see views zero. Yet our TV theme show, playlist has been watched like hundreds of times.
Yeah, well, you know,
so
the other thing is,
I get
we
it,
know. Well, we also know that there was definite problems in finding our YouTube channel. Like it doesn't get it. They Google like prioritizes.
But I put the link in the thing. All you got to do is click on the link.
Yeah.
However, you listen to this show.
I don't remember seeing the link.
The link is at the bottom of the post of part two. It says for YouTube playlist, click here.
Well,
all right, fair enough. So anyway,
but perfect segue.
Yes,
because internet video. Right?
Yes.
Because this is what we were going to talk about a little bit here.
You sent me something.
Or a variation on it.
You sent me something this week
that was
of interest to both
of
us.
So we'll just play a little clip from it and then we'll talk about it. And anybody's HBO knows that theme is, and for those of you who don't, this is the Westworld theme.
Yeah.
This may challenge some people.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Who are not of indeterminate middle age.
Mitchie the kid. Haven't seen you in here for quite some time. You know, Mitch is one of the oldest hosts in the park. Used to have one about best-selling narratives. Dissatisfied city slicker rides out west with his friends to herd cattle and try and find his smile again.
Does finding smile involve going completely off his loop?
Why don't we ask him? Always wanted to do this.
Mitch. Hello.
Do you know where you are?
The waiting room of the CIA? Or the waiting room at CIA? This place has less privacy than Trump Tower.
So, what this is it's a video, which is mashing up. In fact, when I sent it to you, you thought it would be like somebody just cut it, you know,
yeah,
like people do this whole thing. But this is an actual acted skit with Billy Crystal, with Chris Hemsworth, not Chris Hemsworth. He's the other Hemsworth.
The other Hemsworth.
Well, he jokes in the thing. He says, "You're the other Hemsworth." Yeah. And then the other guy who we don't know, he used to be in he's in telephone ads recently, but he's the guy with the beard in Westworld who takes apart the bodies underneath there.
So basically what it is what they've done is that they've taken the character of of Billy Crystal's character from the films, Mitch from the film City Slickers and City Slickers 2, which, if you are not of indeterminate middle age, were actually pretty big films in the early 90s. They were huge. I don't see him on TV very often.
No.
But anyway, they've taken Billy Crystal's character, and that's a film about some city guys who go...
you go on these little vacations.
They go on like an adventure holiday. They go and pretend to be cowboys and all this kind of
stuff. Jack Palance is the crusty old cowboy in it.
And didn't Jack Palance win an Oscar for his role in the original?
Remember the whole thing when he got on stage and he did the one-arm push-ups. And
so anyway, this video is a funny old...
What's his co-star's name? I'm blanking out, and he comes in later.
Bruno Kirby.
No.
Daniel Stern.
Right. So Daniel Stern's in this video also later on.
So anyway, what they're doing is they're playing their characters from City Slickers have somehow ended up as Westworld robots TV series Westworld, but we've talked about here. And if you guys didn't recognize any of that and you don't watch Westworld, then you're probably going to be out of luck for the next few minutes.
Listen, even people who haven't seen it know that Westworld is this thing about robots and a Western thing kind of thing. So it's like... somebody took the time to put this together. I mean, it looks like it's on the sets, which actually at least so where this appears is on Funny or Die. And I think most people know Funny or Die. They might have seen a video at some point of it, but it's essentially a media company started as just internet-based videos.
Yeah, it was a website. That's how I would refer to it. It started life as a website in that the only way you could find it was to go there on the net.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. To me, in terms of, and this is part of our discussion, there are different ways stuff is delivered to us. Something is a TV show, something is on the radio, something is a podcast. But now you have all this crossover where people do podcasts of their radio shows. Do you know what I mean? But
feeds into the discussion we were just having beforehand about how you get your podcast.
Yes,
it's just a question of what is, like, it isn't, it's not that it is a website, it is... the website is the thing through which it delivers. The company itself makes comedy videos.
Okay, yes.
Right.
Yeah, they're a website. Originally. That's what I'm saying.
But I think right out of the gate, they deliver their stuff through YouTube. So you didn't have to go to their website. Like, it wasn't like...
Well, they did. I didn't know that. I thought you had to go to their website and play it.
I'm sure they use YouTube. In fact, I mean, you can't tell from this, but you know, YouTube may be the host... of all the stuff anyway.
I need to look through as always, I've gone to Wikipedia, and I'm now going to rate things in terms of its importance in the world, in terms of the size of its Wikipedia entry. So if you remember our last show, Sgt. Pepper's had a 35-page Wikipedia entry. Therefore, Sgt. Pepper's is a very important part of world history.
Right.
Funny or Die only has a 12-page Wikipedia entry, so it's therefore of middling importance.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the
Atlantic
size,
Voice
size
has
of
no
entry.
Wikipedia entry.
So Funny or Die was founded and is, I think, still principally owned by Will Ferrell, you know, who we know from all the comedies he does and Saturday Night Live and all that. Adam McKay, who has done lots of movies with Will Ferrell.
As a director? Has he been the director?
Writer-director.
Yeah.
Let's see. Those include Anchorman. He was a writer on Saturday Night Live. He did Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys, and all that. He also, more recently, though, did The Big Short. And I think he even got an Oscar nomination for that. Yeah, nominated for Best Director for The Big Short.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's
a real deal. So, but the two of them, plus the third guy, is Chris Henchy. Now, when you go to Chris Henchy's little link, it is
half a page.
So much shorter than the other two. Like, obviously, Will Ferrell's got huge things and things. Well,
there you go.
If he got one third ownership of whatever it is.
Your place in the world is defined by the size of your Wikipedia entry. Chris Henchy, I'm sorry to say, isn't that important.
So I think
only a little bit more important than us.
Funny or Die. So, and then the last owner, which is what made me start thinking about the ownership, is HBO, or at least as of 2008, they had taken a 10% ownership. And the fact that they were able to do this video makes me think if they don't own still part of it, they must have a relationship because they're clearly in the sets of Westworld and they're using the actors, they're using the things.
Yeah, let's segue back to it. So it's basically an 8 or 9 minute skit about Billy Crystal's character. Now it's supplanted to Westworld. You are correct. It has the legit cast. It has the legit sets. Yeah. You're right. The first thing I thought when I watched it was, I mean, it looked like an episode of the show. Clearly, it wasn't done on the cheap.
Some people might do something in their basement where they just like cut and paste the
and
pieces
that's what,
together.
That's what I originally, when you sent it to me, I think the video is titled, what was the, I can't remember what it was titled. video was titled Billy Crystal Westworld City Slickers Mashup. And when you sent me the link, I'm thinking, I saw it was like a YouTube link because that's how it comes up on your email.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, why is my podcasting partner sending me some cheesy YouTube dude in his basement has gone ahead and, you know, done his own goofy cutting together stuff video. Right. So I didn't click on it at first. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to find some time later to watch this nonsense. Then I clicked on it and I'm like, oh, wow, this is a Funny or Die production. And right at that moment, I'm like, yeah, this is the real thing. And right. I actually thought, and to be entirely fair, and maybe we'll make a point about this later, it is very funny.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. I showed it to the other member of the household this morning, and she wasn't as enamored by it, but I still think it's funny.
No, I enjoyed it. I laughed.
So interestingly enough, so I sent you the link on YouTube, but you know, that's not how I saw it originally. And the way I saw it is Amazon Prime Video. And people may know that if you sign up for Amazon Prime, in addition to the free shipping that you get and the free 2-day shipping and the other benefits, and you can play music and there's Prime
Video. Although, why anyone would play music on their computer, who knows?
It's not on your computer, you just do it on your phone. No, I mean, it's an Amazon Prime app on my phone. But they have movies, just like Netflix, it has movies. And not all of them are available for free if you sign up for Prime, but a lot of them are, and a lot of other properties. So when I go to the app on my phone, the Prime Video app, the second row is all Funny or Die videos on Amazon. And so I was just going to send it to you from there, but I couldn't really figure out if I'd be able to share it because Amazon Prime is a sign-up thing. And I was like, okay, well, I'm sure this is on YouTube. So I went and separately searched on YouTube, then sent you the link from there. So that's how you end up with it, YouTube. But it's a perfect example of it's Funny or Die at the end of the day is a content creator.
Yes.
Or a production company that, you know, endorses people or supports people creating content. But you can go to their website, you can go to YouTube, you can go to Amazon Prime Video. And it's funny because on Prime, it marks it as anything that's free. If you're Prime, it's a little marked. Well, of course it's free. It's free if I went over to some other website. So they're happy to just funnel it through their pipes as well. So, you know, when you think of it, compare that to TV shows. Like if a TV show gets made, it doesn't come out through four different avenues, right? Like if you make, it's not like, oh, I can go get it on Channel 5 or I can get it on HBO or I can get it on the internet kind of thing.
No, I've got to totally go to one place.
Providers.
Yeah.
It's, you know, more of a exclusive deal. So the video is interesting in and of itself. Actually, the other part that's interesting about it, but it's really just looking at the broader picture of Funny or Die, is these are big stars, right? Like, so you'd think there is certainly a decent number of Funny or Die stuff.
All right,
that's
so let's go
fledgling comics.
Yeah, let's go Funny or Die before we sort of transition back to YouTube and talk about that for a minute. I mean, Funny or Die, for those of you, and I'm trying to remember the first time I ever found Funny or Die. Probably someone like you probably sent me something and I watched it. They have lots of shows. I mean, I'm a big fan of Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah.
They also have Drunk History, which I think you watched.
Which weren't.
That's always a show that people say, oh, did you watch Drunk History? It's a show on TV.
Oh, yeah, it's on Comedy Central, half-hour show.
So did it start on Comedy Central?
No, I think they produced it for Comedy Central.
Okay.
Comedy Central or MTV, one of those.
Funny or Die, and to your point.
Billy on the Street, you ever seen Billy on the Street?
No.
Oh, that's Billy Eichner. He goes out there with these weird street interviews where he's harassing people in New York City and like asking them stupid quiz questions.
I have seen that.
So that's I think it's on. It's been on a couple of channels, but low level cable channels, not Comedy Central level. But they produce that again and they put it out there. I'm going to guess you probably could watch it at the Funny or Die website. Although I guess the TV stations might want to have some at midnight.
At Midnight with Chris Hardwick,
which is on Comedy Central.
Yes, but that's a Funny or Die production. And then, of course, the Spoils of Babylon that ran on IFC a couple of years ago. I think they did two series of that. It was
Kristen Wiig and
a half-hour comedy show. No, it was a half-hour comedic.
It was bizarro. Like, it was designed to be sort of a spoof of like a dramatic series. Like,
it was a spoof of like a 70s miniseries.
You know, Will Ferrell played like this Orson Welles type character who did a voiceover. Or actually, he appeared at the beginnings in this restaurant drinking his wine, talking about the show, this thing he had produced in the past and how he was bringing it to you. It was very solemn. But the show itself was this oddball, pretend to be dramatic, but really be sort of a spoof of dramatic series. A
whole load of stars are in it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig, who you mentioned, Tobey Maguire, Jessica Alba, Haley Joel Osment, who's the kid from Sixth Sense, Tim Robbins, Michael Sheen, Carey Mulligan, and Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a riff on like a 70s miniseries or like Dallas sort of dynasty or dynasty, as you might say, family drama. I didn't realize, I watched the first series on IFC, the Independent Film Channel, which is a, I guess it's a basic cable channel. I think most cable systems, you get it with your base package. Yeah. It's not sort of the next tier up like HBO. It's not premium like HBO or Showtime or one of these guys. I must say, I watched the whole first series. I didn't realize it was a Funny or Die production.
Right.
I can't say it was the most entertaining. It was weird rather than funny, but I did see the cleverness in it. But again, it's interesting. I didn't realize it was a Funny or Die production because in my mind now, Funny or Die
is a website.
Is a website mind. That give me content in relatively
2 minute
short
bites.
Doses. Not 2 minutes, 6 minutes, right. 15 minutes, but something that.
So the first video they had that like had any traction was the Will Ferrell one about like his landlord is like a baby and like so he comes to the door and is like, you got to get out of here, but I can't remember exactly how it went. We could have queued up, but we don't.
Yeah,
it was pretty funny.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, sure.
I'm not the hugest Will Ferrell fan. There you go. Yeah, I like. Yeah.
Another personal.
Yeah, the personal thing
put on the list.
Thank you. That's fine. Yeah, but like I said, I was a big fan of Between Two Ferns, which was the Zach Galifianakis sort of faux talk show.
He interviewed Obama.
Yeah, and I think, didn't Obama choose to go on...
It was when they were rolling out the healthcare stuff, that he was trying to get young people to sign up for their healthcare.
Which says something now to the whole notion of watching stuff on your computer that the president...
Or your phone.
That the president at the time would look to deliver a major piece of policy to a demographic via that demographics.
Yeah, I don't think that was the prime avenue of announcing it.
No, it wasn't, but it didn't hurt. Yeah. And I think Hillary Clinton went on it at some moment
during her campaign.
So
it worked out well.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's interesting, mentioning Hillary Clinton, I think her husband, when Bill Clinton ran for office... He was like, that was one of the first times. I remember when he went on.
It was,
what was his name?
Leno, I think.
He went on Leno and he played the saxophone on, what was his name? Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Oh, Arsenio.
Arsenio. That was like the first time that a political candidate actually ended up on one of the nightly shows. And now they all do it. And it seems like a regular thing. So in a strange way, to me, this is just the evolution of that.
Mm-hmm.
Funny or Die, they've never flirted with... They don't have any subscription section, do they?
No.
So everything is free. And again, it's the production values, and to maybe bring it back to this Billy Crystal on Westworld, it was clearly done... You know, there's some star power... Yeah, Billy Crystal's a star.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of... Daniel Stern, when you go there, I think that's what's interesting about it, is for something that we don't generally see a lot about... They have all kinds of people. That when I looked at that, it rolled over next to this. Like, it was a series of 2 minute things by Don Cheadle.
Cheadle.
Where he was playing this sort of superhero who like turned people into trees because he was all about the environment. And eventually, he's like he goes power mad and he's turning literally everybody into trees. And it was like a six part. Each part was only like 2 or 3 minutes, but like six parts of him going through this whole thing. And eventually, they defeated him because his kryptonite, so to speak. Was woodpeckers.
Oh.
And the woodpeckers came after him. And
I'll need to watch that, even though that was a spoiler.
But I thought about the fact that, like, these are major people. I think a lot of this, and it's the same thing you see even in the, a lot of movies, where they all like hanging out and being funny, like, particularly if they're not always in comedy. Like, it's tons of fun to show up and do something for a half a day, and they feel like it's hilarious, and then they move on.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because it's, I mean, I wonder... I mean, I'm sure they must get some. Billy Crystal didn't give up his time, and I'm now just talking about the front of camera talent. I don't think the other Hemsworth, Billy Crystal, and Daniel Stern did it for free, and that must have taken a little while because there's
a behind the scenes thing. I imagine it was over the course of a day, but I don't think it was too complicated. But that's what I think is. But it can't be that these like they didn't need the money, obviously. So it's got to be the major selling point is like, hey, this will be fun. You go do this for a day, get paid a couple of bucks, or maybe they all get a piece of Funny or Die, or maybe they get a piece of like the ad rolls that come from it. And so
this is where it comes back to YouTube. people like putting their stuff up there.
Yeah.
Then that maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and again, right. I mean, that was my point too, because I guess we're going to talk about YouTube a little bit. As I said earlier, when you first sent it to me, it was coming via YouTube, and I thought it was some goofy homemade mashup done by some dude in his basement.
Mm-hmm.
Or with a partner in his basement. And I was very dismissive about it because I think, to me, YouTube still, and I know I'm now going to prove that I'm the one who's out of the times. YouTube was still, to me, and there's a part of me that when you say something is YouTube, that it feels like it's amateur hour, meaning it's regular folk
getting
a chance to put stuff up there, like their playlists or whatever it may be. YouTube is sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, it's like the internet high street, it's the shopping mall, do you know what I mean, rather than the boutique.
I think people know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was a bit like, oh, YouTube. But it's interesting, it then made me think more about how even YouTube is now changing, because I think originally when who founded YouTube?
Oh, I don't know.
Because it's owned by Google now, but originally it was a dude who just put it up there, and I think, I can't remember his name, maybe you could look it up there.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube put itself up there as a way to allow the regular Joe.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, like, look at, there's, you know, now it's all live, right? Like, that's the big next wave is live video.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Instagram and Facebook and everybody's trying to get there to have live video. So forget about, like, recordings, it's broadcast, basically free broadcast. Oh, I mean, I ended up on the YouTube website. I wanted to get to YouTube on Wikipedia.
You want to get a Wikipedia. But, and of course, you know, there was that whole wave of people who sort of went on YouTube, and that's where it starts if you went viral. 9 times out of 10, you were going viral on YouTube with either your cat video or people endlessly singing. I mean, and there are all kinds of people who are apparently YouTube stars and have made all kinds of money taking their persona to YouTube.
YouTube was founded by Chad Hurley, Steve Chen, and Jawed Karim, who are all early employees of PayPal. They developed the idea for YouTube during the early months of 2005. So that was after you know, your technology level is with your computer, since that was 2004. After they experienced difficulty sharing videos that had been shot at a dinner party, etc. So, you know, it wasn't exactly social networking intended, but it was supposed to be in a place that people could put videos and everybody could access videos. Like maybe at the time, you know, the photo, things like Shutterfly, where you could put your pictures up and other people could come see the pictures.
Yeah.
So the idea.
It's interesting because we've never thought about putting our show up on YouTube. Maybe we need to start doing it. Just putting a blank picture and have, again, I don't know.
I'm not laughing at that. What I'm laughing at is the next paragraph. In Wikipedia, it says, Kareem said the inspiration for YouTube first came from Janet Jackson's role in the 2004 Super Bowl incident when her breast was exposed during a performance, and later from the Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004. He couldn't easily find video clips of either event online, which led him to the idea of video sharing site.
I don't mean to laugh, but
except the next one says it was the original idea was a video version of online dating services, and it was inspired by one of these websites at the time that was sort of about evaluating people's looks.
So anyway, YouTube have sort of vaguely been in the electronic media news recently because they've changed their rules a little bit about what you can do to make money. Obviously, any of you, when you watch YouTube, when you watch something on YouTube now, invariably it will be preceded by a commercial. Some you're able to skip after 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, some algorithms as to which get them. And I'm sure it's part of the deal of when you put it up there. If you're a content that demands some attention, you can, like, they can say, okay, we're going to have the ads be 30 seconds and you have to sit through them.
Well, obviously, though, if your stuff was getting ads in front of it, then at some moment money was being kicked back to you. That's my understanding. If you're the person
to put
it up
there. Yeah.
Well, YouTube have now changed it that now you have to have had a certain number of views. Your channel needs to have had a certain number of views before you start making money, because they were concerned. It is partly a way to control the content that went up there. And I found this article on The Verge, a website, which says the headline is YouTube will no longer allow creators to make money until they reach 10,000 views. I'd also heard something on, I think, National Public Radio, where it was all also part of, and this comes back to what you were talking about streaming, is it Facebook Live? It all came back to this notion of at some level, people also wanted to ensure that what you were putting up there wasn't, and as I heard it on the radio, and I wish I could remember the source, it wasn't politically offensive. They were worried about people using YouTube and Facebook for, you know, nefarious reasons, like terrorist
propaganda. I was going to say, not political offense. I don't think that's the issue.
But you know what I mean? It was also,
if it's a terrorist broadcasting a message out to various sleeper cells around to, you know, set the bombs off, they don't want that to happen, mostly because they don't want to get sued for it, you know?
Yeah, that was probably the reason. So, yeah, I'm now, and again, it's interesting that, and the whole point, maybe the point I'm trying to make is that YouTube now is this very broad church where Joe Amateur can do whatever he wants and get it up there. But also, I mean, there's all kinds of legit content that is made for YouTube. I mean, what's that thing where they talk about late night TV in America where the hosts now, you know, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, James Corden, the ratings are important, but what's more important is, you know, is their monologue being downloaded the next day on YouTube?
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
All the time, but I have no idea. Like, they can't make anywhere close to the revenue they do as a TV show off of, like, putting their clips onto YouTube. It's about
people play
that part up because that means you're hip. That means you're succeeding if people are sharing your video, but I don't think that's really the revenue driver.
No, but I guess at some level it is a second step way to attempt to drive your traditional revenue of advertisers and sponsors and all that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, yes, I understand that at 12:30 in the morning you're only getting 1.3 million viewers, but hey, the next morning, you know, what's the famous YouTube thing that that Corden did? Carpool Karaoke.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that thing's supposed to get millions of watchers the next day because they don't want to stay up until 1 in the morning to see it. They just go to YouTube the next morning.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I tend to watch, you know, either Stephen Colbert monologue or Trevor Noah on The Daily Show the next day when a newspaper article has said, yeah, this is so-and-so talking about such-and-such, and this is what the hosts did, and then I'll click on it or I'll go and find it on YouTube in order to watch it. So it's interesting how the existence of that channel has influenced how certain content is is delivered to us.
Yeah. They're heading off to being TV, a cable provider, basically, anyway. And February of this year, a press announcement held at YouTube announced the launch of YouTube TV, an over-the-top MVPD-style subscription service. What that really means is $35 a month. They would offer live stream for all of the major networks, as well as USA Network, Sci-Fi, Disney, E, Fox Sports, Freedom, FX, and ESPN. So that you would just pay $35 a month and you could get all those channels and you play it through your computer and then maybe throw it from your computer onto your Chromecast or whatever it is on your TV. So you don't need a cable box.
Interesting. Unless
you've got an internet feed, you can get these set of channels. So it's sort of a virtual cable system, basically.
But so I'm wondering how the station's going to make money.
No, I'm sure their same ads are going to, I mean, it's being carried live, I think.
So basically YouTube are going to go head to head with the cable companies. Although, strangely enough, all the cable companies are also in the internet business, so it doesn't matter. You can't get YouTube without being on the internet. So at the end of the day, you're still paying twice for something.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is, you know, like the cable system would, by the way, MVPD, I didn't know what it was, multi-channel video programming distributor. So I think what that is a generic word for saying cable companies, Dish, all these folks that give you a set of channels, a suite of channels. So now they're entering into that virtual space. The problem is that nobody, like, so classically on a cable system, most channels, the cable system didn't have to pay for that. The like smaller channels, they were just happy to be there, or they would pay for the cable system to carry them.
Okay.
Sports, no, the opposite. ESPN.
Well, all these DIY, ESPN got paid, all these DIY and
everybody,
channels and
everybody
stuff.
Had it. But like when you look at the number of subscriptions that include ESPN, it's fallen. It's totally falling. Yeah. Like they're losing people who are doing this because more people are cutting cords and going a different direction. And ESPN, even with its sports, can't demand the kind of premium that it normally gets. Or it's not making enough revenue anyway.
Because didn't Amazon do a deal recently straight with the NFL to stream their Thursday night games?
Yeah, something like that.
And they tried to say, originally Twitter had thought about getting in on that bidding too, so I guess you could stream it through your Twitter account, and then Amazon ended up winning it. So my question for you is this going to mean the end? What's going to happen to regular YouTube? Because no, the bottom line is, where am I going to go for my funny cat videos?
Yeah, I mean, that's still the same place. But the thing is, like, do you know anybody, like, in all the years, do you know anybody who's put things on YouTube?
Other than us?
Yeah, meaning their own stuff.
Yes, I know one other person who did.
Like, and it was video of them or of filmed?
They would film themselves
so talking about. But that's stuff. Very, very rare. Like, so for something that has that much video content and to be entirely fair,
that I think their subscription numbers were better than ours. So I try not to watch them anymore, even though I know them, because I'm like, I feel like I'm putting myself out of business, even though. No, but I actually know the person, and
right. It's rare, right? Like, yeah. You know, it's not like you know a bunch of people, but meanwhile, we all know tons of people who are on Instagram putting their pictures up on a regular basis.
That's no different, is it? Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's similar, but the one thing about it is, and YouTube is probably missing, is it's fully public, right? So Instagram has the ability to control who you can see your pictures and things like that.
Yes.
So I don't know if YouTube has a notion of maybe getting in on that kind of action. Because YouTube is not really a social network, whereas Instagram is a social network.
No, YouTube is.
Same with Facebook, obviously.
YouTube is a website. Well, it is, isn't it? You go there and then you search through it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've never in all my years did I ever think of being a cord cutter. All of a sudden now, though, and you know, you mentioned Amazon Prime. I'm also a member of Amazon Prime. I do watch more things on YouTube, and I find that you know, if you're sitting there, if you're just sitting on the couch with a couple of hours to, if you're not careful,
you can get lost. I mean, it has nice algorithms for leading you to something else. Yes. And that's what I assume Funny or Die is doing at the end of the day. Yeah. So anyway, long way of saying Funny or Die is out there still, has some pretty good things, some surprises that you wouldn't know that are there.
Yeah.
Go poke around, check it out, a little publicity for them.
All right, so that's our TV.
TV-related, HBO-related, which kind of ties into the Westworld thing, is True Detective. You know, everybody, they had season one. Some people liked it, some people didn't, but generally got nice reviews.
And the overrated season one, the underrated season two. That's my position.
Most people hated season two.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing.
I didn't hate it, but it certainly was not anywhere close to season one. But they basically had said, we're done. Because it was all written by Pizzolatto, the author he's an author, right? Crime author, something like that?
Yeah, originally, yes.
And they said, we're all done with this thing. But just recently, a bunch of things, in fact, I mean, relatively, not just rumors, but strong talk, it appeared in Vanity Fair and Entertainment Weekly and all this was...
it's being reported as fact.
Yes. Yeah, so season 3 is coming with David Milch. David Milch, for people who don't know, is Deadwood guy, like wrote all... Or, I guess
Deadwood, NYPD Blue.
Right.
I think he did a couple of other shows with Stephen Bochco way back in the day as well. I think he might have been involved in LA Law. Milch and Bochco had worked together for a long time. Bochco, I think, is pretty much retired. Milch has gone on. Deadwood was his next big show. I also think he's done. Anyway, he is known for sort of this hard driving. In the same way that David Mamet is known for a certain style of script writing, Milch is known for, you know, edgy street talk, profanity. No, that's unfair when I say it that way. But you know what I mean. Like, you know, it's the notion that if he's written something and you've liked the other stuff, then yeah, you're going to love listening to this.
Yeah.
He is the celebrity writer.
So anyway, there are a lot of people who love Deadwood, so maybe there'd be two sets of constituencies excited about this. The people who liked True Detective and people like Deadwood might say, ooh, there's something there.
But apparently, McConaughey might get involved. That's been said. It's all out there.
They had credits on the second season just because they stuck around the first season.
To be fair, while I was very I've always been critical of the notion of – I've always said it was just lazy branding – but in this instance, I have been outsmarted by the professionals. Because now, by just calling something True Detective 3,
attention.
We have no idea who's going to be in it. But you just throw it out there and people go, whoa.
Yeah, it's an interesting blend of a brand without knowing what it is.
Yeah.
Like when you just renew a season, you're like, oh, sure, same people. But this one, it's like, it could be a whole other thing.
I struggle.
Like, I think I used this phrase before. It's almost like a sub. It's obviously very small, but it's almost like a sub channel. That basically, if you create a line of product,
yes,
but it's all different within there. It's like a sub-brand, let's say, to HBO.
I mean, if I was HBO, I would go ahead and just have a True Detective website, and you could just get stuff, because that's what you do. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like Funny or Die, isn't it? You just say, oh, it's Funny or Die. If you say to me, I didn't think of this. When you'd sent me that Billy Crystal Westworld thing, if you'd said to me in the email, oh, this is from Funny or Die, I immediately would have been conditioned to treat it differently. I was, like I say, it took me a while when you first send it to me via YouTube. I'm like, oh, some other dude mucking around in his basement. What do I want to see this for? But if you just said to me, oh, this is Funny or Die, again, that's Brandon for you.
Just trying to preserve the mystery.
Yes.
Well, listen, we're trying to make this relatively quick so we can get to the prom. So I need to turn us to the next topic, which I know you don't want to talk about. Talk about the Premier League.
We haven't done English sports Premier, in a long time.
Haven't talked very much. We'll just talk for a couple of minutes. I mean, here we are. We're recording on a Saturday
FA Cup final Saturday
after Chelsea just vanquished Tottenham. Saturday. So I'm very pleased as a Chelsea fan.
You are.
Arsenal, kind of a different year, although they do play tomorrow. They could end up in the final against Chelsea of the Cup, that is.
The Cup, yeah. Can I quickly interrupt you? 5 years ago, I would have felt the need to explain to our listeners what we're talking about.
Yeah, no,
and
not
yet,
now.
You know, soccer, and perhaps even more specifically, the Premier League and the exploits of his teams, have now entered the sports and entertainment consciousness in a way, especially for people our age and younger, millennials, that I don't actually have to explain what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this show somewhere in America, obviously the rest of the world, if you're a listener, you already know what we're talking about. But the sort of stereotype is an American's going to be sitting there going, these guys are talking soccer. But now, I met someone for the first time yesterday, you know, just one of those casual moments, someone introduces someone. Yes, what's your team?
Yeah.
And I think the words out of my mouth was, yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm not watching a lot of football at the moment. Yeah. I think that was how I actually responded to. But it was interesting how that was a conversation with an American chap, not much younger than I. That was the conversation.
What was his team?
West Ham.
See, that's, you know, that takes some.
I kind of respected that because it'd be easy to bandwagon jump on one of the big ones. Right. But this guy, for whatever, I didn't ask him why. I just wanted to move on from the conversation.
So this all ties into CSI Dan. I don't know if I told you this ahead of time. But so CSI Dan has been CSI Dan's girlfriend, who, because I've been authorized the way I have for other people, we could give her a name, but she's.
No, that's
I know CSI Dan through his girlfriend.
She's probably on.
She's an Arsenal fan.
She is, yes.
Now, I don't know the whole history of how she got to be an Arsenal fan. That's not the most important part. But CSI Dan has been exploring his options in being a soccer fan and has a friend who was trying to convince him to be a Man United fan. And I was trying to explain that this was not an appropriate decision to be made. He already has a girlfriend
who's an Arsenal fan.
Who's an Arsenal fan. Why not get that route? I mean, I'm okay with that. You know, not you know, being a Chelsea fan or options, but being a Man United fan just isn't really an appropriate decision for anybody.
Bandwagon jumping.
Yeah.
Well, but to be fair,
what's weird about it is that they used to be the ultimate like expat. Nobody followed them. You know, like nobody. The joke was that they didn't really have any fans that were in England. It was just fans.
Yeah, there's no fans around the world. There's no fans in Manchester.
Right.
There used to be an argument that there were more Manchester United fans in London. What did we call them when I was a kid? They were either Cockney Manx or Cockney Reds, and the notion was they were more. If Manchester United came to play, you know, at home, as we say, then the away section wouldn't be full of people from Manchester. It would be full of people from down the street,
right. So, but ever since Ferguson has left, they've, you know, been on rough and choppy waters.
Yes.
So now people get fooled. It's the same thing with a bunch of people are adopting Liverpool. And the Liverpool for a bunch of years now has been pretty bad, but they were the juggernaut. They were the Yankees of the league for so long, maybe not in terms of fan base, but they were in the terms of domination of the league. So people kind of forget, like this set of Americans, it's very interesting because they can just lend their allegiance to a team.
Well, I'm going to criticize CSI Dan for looking at his options. You don't look at my girlfriend's an Arsenal fan. That's my team. Yeah. I don't remember how I do remember why I ended up being an Arsenal fan. It was the first game I was taken to. It was the closest big team to me. That's how it was.
Yeah.
And while there have been many times in the last many decades that I have tried to find reasons to divorce my team, it don't work that way.
Right. No, that's it. You're stuck with it now. That's why, like...
You're married for life.
That's why it's important when somebody's doing this formative effort to make sure, like...
Yeah. CSI Dan, I'm picking Arsenal because it's my girlfriend's team. You don't sit around and go, look, can I make a value judgment?
So, obviously, every time I talk to people about, you know, what their team is, they all pick their team, you know, in the past 5 years or something. Maybe longer. I mean, I followed Chelsea for longer than that myself. But when I always mention that my podcast buddy Zeph, you know, is an Arsenal fan, I feel like it necessary to explain that you're like from childhood, like you went to games and you didn't, you know, it's not it's not like a U.S. person picking a team.
Yeah, I'm not Johnny come lately.
In fact, you didn't even pick it at all. It was given to you and bestowed upon you essentially. Maybe somebody didn't like affirmatively, consciously think, I'm going to make him a fan of this, but based on where you went and what you did, that became your team.
Because as an adult, I'd be following someone else. I'm telling you that right now.
But so he's picking that. And the other thing, he really was hoping there would be some team with a quality U.S. player. And I was like, we're not really in that situation.
It is interesting.
There have been points in time where you could have, you know, could have followed Fulham because they had Dempsey, or you could have, you know, I guess for a little while there, Claudio Reyna played at Man City briefly, I think.
And we are going to get to the Arsenal story to do with in a moment. But it's interesting too, though. Premier League teams are now very aware of this opening market to them.
Oh yeah,
and so that's why you have a lot of Americans trying to own teams, and they're trying to market here, and they all come here on tour. And obviously, the NBC contract is huge. And so it's funneled all kinds of money back into the team. So there is this real notion that it's this sort of, you know, sort of, I'm trying to think of a word, sort of fertile ground for the likes of CSI Dan, who they hope will up their cable package or maybe go and buy a shirt or do whatever they need to. So CSI Dan, from a selfish perspective, you need to become an Arsenal fan and you need to go to their website right now and buy about $400 in gear. Because hopefully we'll put that back into the team.
Counterpoint
somehow.
To being an Arsenal fan. You know, we already had the counterpoint of Piers Morgan being a fan, but now he's sort of disappeared from the US airways. So we don't
hear depressing.
Well, if Baron Trump.
This one's even fatter.
Donald Trump's son, youngest son, who is, I don't know how old he is.
14, 10, 12. No, is he like, oh, no. Okay, he's in there. He's little.
He was spotted. There's a picture of him playing on the White House lawn in a full Arsenal kit.
Full gear, socks. I'm going to give him his due. Because I've, anyone who knows, I think we covered this in my Christmas show. I'm wearing a suit today, as you just said. And this is one of the few times when I'm wearing, like, one get-up, which is what a suit is. But even me as a longtime Arsenal fan, I'd go out of the house with either the shirt on or the shorts or a top, but never all at the same time.
Is full kit wanker like one of these things that was invented in the US, or is that an old term?
I don't know. I can't honestly.
There's like
know.
Websites that are dedicated to the pictures of like full kit wankers, but I don't know if that's something somebody in Brooklyn invented on their podcast or if it's something that goes back.
I hope you're not going to call the president's son that right now, because then you and I are probably going to have some people bursting through the door, and me being from another country, then I'm being sent
home. I think
home
if you're a kid, technically, you can't be a full kit wanker.
No, you're a kid, because you've been given it, and that's what you do with it.
It's like a costume as a kid.
But he was wearing it all at the East Egg Roll.
Yeah.
At least he was spotted. I don't think he wore it at the East Egg Roll, but he was spotted playing in the White House Garden in his full Arsenal kit.
Right.
And so I'm like, wow, you know, we now have Piers Morgan. I guess it's better. I don't know. Is it better or worse for the team? You know, you can make a case that... I'm trying to think of... Arsenal had a famous... There used to be the story back in the early 2000s that apparently Osama bin Laden was an Arsenal fan. Now, I don't know. And again, I don't know how true all these things are, but thanks to the internet. So, yeah, like I say. But to be fair with you, Baron Trump, Osama bin Laden, Piers Morgan, as an Arsenal fan, I've got more pressing concerns now about my fandom than those comedians. So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, a couple of quick Chelsea notes. As long as we're on that.
Go on.
So Didier Drogba, who was a longtime star for them, scored the winning penalty kick when he came back the second time to Chelsea.
That's right.
In the Champions League final after scoring the tying goal. He's now signed up to play. He played for Toronto. He bounced around for a while. He was in China. He was in Turkey. And he played for Toronto in the MLS.
Yeah.
But now he signed up to play for the second division down, U.S. I can't remember what the league is called. U.S.
USISL. You're talking about the ones below MLS.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the minor league to that. He signed
up USISL.
He signed up like that. Signed up play up for Phoenix.
Yeah,
it's called the Phoenix Rising. How's that for a name?
That's fair enough. Yeah.
And apparently part of the deal is he's signed up to play for 2 years and he automatically goes right into ownership from there. And they're trying to get themselves promoted up to, and they don't do a promotion or relegation, it's an expansion thing. So right now, like the MLS has been looking. In fact, I think Atlanta.
MLS has something like 24 teams now. It's huge.
Portland was a lower division team, I think, that got moved up. They've got moved up.
The Portland Timbers.
So like rather than doing, you know, like a lot of sports, they'll do an expansion from scratch.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is take places that already have a club and then say, okay, we'll move you into the system.
That's the way to do it.
Makes
more sense.
So this is part of the Phoenix owners' push to get themselves visibility. But it's a really interesting thing. I mean, Dieter Drogba always struck me as interesting because on the field, you'd think he was a thug. Like just the way he sort of leaned. Everything was just...
He's a big guy.
Muscle guy.
Physical, very good player.
Yeah. But he's got all these things outside of the field.
He scored something like 75 goals against Arsenal individually.
From the Ivory Coast. But he's got all these other things he gets involved with, like this. You know, it just seems like a very shrewd and interesting play. And he had some political, like in the Ivory Coast, yes, when they were having unrest, he was literally like he was negotiating sort of, hey, everybody cool out here, you know, and people are listening to him because he's like a major figure for the Ivory Coast.
It's interesting how back in the day, sports stars wanted to transcend sports and try and get into TV and they'd all go into TV. And now, but there is this sort of now this new sort of stratosphere where people like Didier Drogba have parlayed their sports fandom into basically being a person of influence in society.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, I mean, that's slightly extreme, but yeah, I was at Didier Drogba is arguably, you know, one of, you know, Ivory Coast's greatest soccer player. So now that gets him freight. In the same way that Bono, frontman for U2, he's meeting Nelson Mandela. Now, really, why Nelson Mandela would want to meet the lead singer of anyone, not meeting Simon Le Bon or, you know, the lead from Green Day, but he is meeting Bono. It's interesting nowadays how your success in a field of entertainment, of which sports is, depending who you are. But what I'm saying is, I do suspect it's not accidental. I think your point here is there are some intentional decisions that he makes to influence the brand Didier Drogba.
But I also think he's just more interesting. Like the choices he makes me respect him more, because it's not just to like turn this into money. I mean, he could find easier ways to turning his prominence into money than going to Phoenix to try to bring this team up a division and take an ownership stake. And they're just different things he could do. And I just think that the fact that he's doing it, whether it's successful or not, just reflects to me a more intriguing mind. And I'm going to make this contrast to somebody else.
Do that.
Who is, of course, leader legend John Terry of Chelsea, who has announced, well, he was not going to be allowed to stay any longer. He's not really playing this year. He's been at Chelsea, I mean, since he was originally in West Ham's, I think it was West Ham's development originally.
I mean, it was funny. I watched the FA Cup semi-final today.
I think it was Villa.
I watched the
FA Cup. No, West Ham's United system. And then, but by the time he was 14, he moved over to Chelsea. He's been there. He's now 37 years old, or 36. He may be 36, I think.
I remember watching him get elbowed off the ball by Ray Parlour in the 2002 FA Cup final.
Yeah, he started playing
when he was 17. 15. This is a guy who's hacked out. He's hacked out a career for all his 20
years of playing in Premier League games at one club.
I've got great respect for that.
So, you know, amazing stuff. And I don't even know if that can be done anymore, because just players move more often in all leagues. And I was trying to think of comparables in the American sports, but I didn't have the time to look it all up.
Tom Brady.
Tom
Brady would be the closest.
Yeah,
that's true. And I know he has a very different persona.
Right.
You know, he's married to Giselle. But Tom Brady's been – he's a one-team guy. He's 40 years of age. He is that team. He is, you talk New England Patriots, you mentioned the coach, and you mentioned Tom Brady. So that's what I mean. He is the closest comparison. I think that might be the closest comparison to John Terry's case we can find.
So, and Terry's got lots of scandals in his background and things like that. But the reason I bring it up in contrast, and thankfully I don't believe we have a deep and wide Chelsea following of our podcast, is there's something weird about him. There's something in, like, when he made this announcement, like, whenever he makes announcements or some statement comes out, I don't know if he has bad PR people, but it all sounds a little...
Like he's got an agenda?
Weirdly wooden, you know, and like, he, partway through his announcement of leaving, he's, like, touting things he's done in a way that I just... Either he does that in real life, and he'd be horrible company. Or he just has band people, like he doesn't really know what to say. So somebody says, well, let's say these nice things about you. And they're just really weird. I don't know how to describe it. And, you know, if I'd taken more time and we weren't our 1 hour mark, I would try to.
It's the antithesis of Drogba.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's the other end. Like, whereas, you know, I've never heard Drogba give a speech or anything. I guess I've never really heard either one of them give a speech. I see him doing the after game comments. But I just, the way he does things, Drogba does, it just makes me think that there's a person who's got some, the wheels are turning up there. Whereas with John Terry, I just feel like he's always been a footballer, an English footballer.
That's who he is.
The talk is, oh, he'll come back as a coach or things like that. But he just doesn't seem to have that kind of
thinking. I think you are correct. And I don't mean this as a slam on John Terry. He is what he is. Yeah. And I'm a footballer. I've had this long career. Yeah, I've been involved in some controversial moments with either other players on the field or other players' wives off the field, whatever it may be. But that's who he is. Whereas I don't suspect if there is any greater narrative to his career, it's all going to be retroactive. Like, oh wow, how can I parlay this into something? Whereas I do have a greater sense with Didier Drogba that at least for the last 5 or 7 years, he's just looked at everything in terms of what's. And again,
he's trying to be a full, multifaceted person, but like he's taking his soccer brand and turning. Yes. Yeah, but he's turning turning into different areas or something. Like, whereas Terry, I imagine it's got to be he's and he says he wants to keep playing, but it's, you know, like MLS is basically saying we're not interested. MLS is trying to move away from these.
I do not
old stars and paying
I do
them a
not.
Fortune.
Let me put it this way: I do not suspect that John Terry has any eyes right now on an equally visible career outside of football. Whereas you can easily see Didier Drogba, still being in sports, but, you know, again, like Bono, rock star, but also international ambassador of goodwill.
Yeah, I was going to use the word. So that's about it for sports.
So if you're an Arsenal fan, you should have clicked off a while ago.
Well, we got to get Zeph out of here to get to his proms.
Yeah, I'll go get the prom. Let me see. On the docket, we're probably coming up. We don't quite know the exact order. We have some interesting tech stories that we're going to do in a show. And not far away from our summer movie preview, another big two-parter.
So once again, we won't see each other for a month.
We won't see each other on the other side of that, but hopefully we'll be out busy watching films.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's it. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.